The devil shall cast some of you into prison. Oh, no. Not prison. Suffering is called for. Imprisonment. Death. You will suffer. You will be cast into prison. You will be tried. You will have tribulation 10 days. What does that mean? If you look at what the church is doing in chapter 11 in Revelation, you see that what they're doing mostly is prophesying and causing plagues and stuff like that. And it is only near the end that they are brought down and destroyed and killed. So I would say that the period of their actual trouble for them, because remember, the tribulation is mostly tribulation for the rest of the world, for that's not really for us. The bad things that God brings on the world are to punish the world, not to punish us. He has not appointed us to wrath. Though we are there as instruments of God's wrath. We have been appointed to obtain salvation, but we are not there to, we're not there to be hit by 100-pound hailstones. Those are for the wicked. In the Lord's wrath, 1,000 people could die right next to you, but it wouldn't touch you. Don't you believe that? So we do not fear the wrath of God. When God's wrath is poured out on the world, I want to be right there. I want to stand right there in the midst of it and watch. Why not? Why is it that they see the only way you can escape the wrath of God is to just fly away? What about the 3 Hebrew children in the fiery furnace? Why can't I stand in the midst of the flames? Because I'll tell you what. It seems like in the book of Revelation, it says we will stand in the midst of the flames. Read chapter 11. We won't just be standing in the midst of the flames. We'll be calling the flames out. I mean, that's what I read. So though the world is going to experience a tribulation that will last for years, we will have 10 days. Or at least that's the message to this one of the 2 churches that finds no fault with, is that they will have 10 days of tribulation. I mean, the period of our trouble where the devil has his way with us is going to last 10 days. That could include trial, torment, and execution. So it's just 10 days. 10 long, miserable, painful days. Yet, what glory would come from it? And so that's what I look at it as, is that we should not live in fear of the tribulation that is for the world. Our tribulation is of an entirely different order. The trouble we will go through, we will be tried. We will go through tribulation. We will not be going through the wrath of God or any of those fearful things that everyone always is so freaked out about. But it does say the devil will overcome them and kill them. And the period under which he's going to have power over us, that will be 10 days. That's what it says. Be faithful unto death, because it's going to be a trial, and then it's going to be for our lives. And we will have a crown of life. And we know that is going to work for us, because in the book of Revelation in chapter 11, it says, the 2 candlesticks, their lives are forfeit. And after 3 days and a half, they are seen standing on their feet. They stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them. And they heard a great voice from heaven saying to them, come up hither. And that will be very ironic for all the Christians who have fallen away at that time. Because that's the verse in chapter 4 and 5, come up hither and I will show you things which shall be hereafter. Some people say, well, there's the rapture. In chapter 11, it makes a lot more sense when they are raised from the dead. And then he says, come up hither. Well, that seems a lot more like what they think of as the rapture. But it's really the resurrection. Verse 11, he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh shall not be heard of the second death. The second death shall have no power over them. Blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection, it says in chapter 20. For on such the second death hath no power. There is more than one death. There is the first death. That is the death when we die. We sleep in the dust of the earth till the resurrection. Then we rise. Then there is another death. That is the death of eternal darkness, of eternal destruction. That is the lake of fire spoken of in chapter 20. This is the second death. Death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. Death and hell. Hell being, in that verse, Hades, the place of the dead, the place where dead people have been. That whole order of death that has been, all that past death is going to be wrapped up and thrown away in the second death. The second death is going to wrap up all death, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain. That's what it says, and no more pain. No more sorrow, no more crying. It's all going to be wrapped up in the lake of fire, which is the second death. So verse 12 says, to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things saith he which hath the sharp sword with 2 edges. Out of his mouth there goes a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. His word goes out of his mouth as a sharp two-edged sword. The tongue is like a sword. You know, it's pointy. It's not that long, but I mean, it's kind of like shaped like a pointed object. When on Pentecost Day, there were tongues like as a fire on their heads. Light a match, you'll see fire forms a sort of tongue shape. So there is this sort of relation. Is not my word like as a fire, like a hammer that breaks the rock in pieces? The word of God is like a sword, a fire. It burns, it cuts, it devours. It makes alive, it destroys life. It hurts, it wounds, and it heals. And he gives us that same power when he puts his spirit in us and the word of God proceeds out of our mouths. And you see that in the two witnesses in chapter 11 when they are speaking and fire proceeds out of their mouths to devour their enemies. Anyone who would hurt them is killed by the fire that proceeds out of their mouth. I always think it's interesting, and I'll say this several times, when in the Antichrist, the beast and the false prophet, they call down fire from heaven. And that's one of the miracles he performs to convince people that he is God, calling down fire from heaven. But the witnesses have fire proceed out of their mouths, which is indicative of the fact that the Spirit of God is in them. The position of God in relationship to his church is he is in them. Whereas Satan, he still needs to get his power from heaven. It's very external to him. God gives him this power for a season, but it is not in him. It is outside of him. He can call it forth. Whereas for the witnesses, the power is within them. The Spirit of God is within them. But I can see easily how this will be interpreted by the world in a very negative sense, because they won't see the poetic beauty of that. They will see it as the devil is in them and the fire comes from the devil. Whereas this one, we see the fire coming from heaven. So he is obviously of God. Verse 13, I know thy works and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. And thou holdest fast my name and hast not denied my faith. Even in those days wherein Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you where Satan dwelleth. So there's not a lot of good said here. I know your works and where you dwell, where Satan's seat is. You hold fast my name and hast not denied my faith. Even in those days, so this is looking back, even in those days wherein Antipas was my faithful martyr. Martyr is another word for witness. Martus is the Greek word. Translated witness, and that's where we get martyr from. He was this faithful witness and was slain among you where Satan dwelleth. So he repeats that that's where Satan is. You are where Satan is. That's not a good place to be. I wouldn't want to be in the type of group of believers